The UN Security Council demands Houthis halt Red Sea attacks.
Repeated Houthi attacks on international shipping are a security threat.
A report says Russia is using African gold to fund its war in Ukraine. It's called blood gold.
It is directly tied to Russia's violent criminal aggression in Ukraine.
And this year, 4 billion people in more than 50 nations, almost half the world's population, are set to vote.
Voters are set to wield their democratic power on an unprecedented scale.
Today is Thursday, January 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. The UN Security Council on Wednesday adopted a resolution on maritime security in the Red Sea after recent Houthi attacks. U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfeld.
The resolution unequivocally demands the Houthis cease their brazen attacks, which violate international law. It underscores the Council's support for navigational rights and freedoms of vessels of all states in the Red Sea.
Earlier in the day, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed the Red Sea issue while he was in Bahrain.
As we made clear, and many other countries made clear, there'll be consequences for the Houthis' actions. We've also repeatedly tried to make clear to Iran, as other countries have as well, that the support that they're providing to the Houthis, including for these actions, needs to stop. It's not in their interest to see the conflict escalated. And we're not the only ones who sent that message to Iran.
In Gaza, after weeks of U.S. pressure to scale down operations, Israel said this week it was planning to begin drawing down troops. But the fighting appears to be as intense as ever, especially in the southern and central parts of Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made an address on national television.
Israel has no intention of permanently occupying Gaza or displacing its civilian population. Israel is fighting Hamas terrorists, not the Palestinian population. And we are doing so in full compliance with international law.
Turkey this month has arrested dozens of people accused of spying for Israel. Dorian Jones reports that the arrests were highly publicized, which is seen as a warning to Israel.
Turkish authorities raided dozens of homes in early January in a major operation targeting alleged spy rings run by Israel's Mossad intelligence service. The raids came after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned of serious consequences should Israel try to hunt down members of the Palestinian militant group Hamas in Turkey. Murat Aslan is a senior analyst for the Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research, an Ankara think tank.
It's very clear from the threats of Israelis that Turkey is selected as a venue for attacks on Hamas. In this case, then, Turkish intelligence, at the very first instance, and by the words of President, warned Israeli intelligence in Ankara that there must be no act. But right after this warning, it was a political warning, intelligence organization activated cells of Mossad in Turkey.
Israel has not commented on the arrests, but Israeli military leaders and government ministers are vowing to track down those involved in Hamas's October 7 attack on Israel, wherever they reside. With Erdogan, a strong supporter of Hamas, often describing it as a liberation movement, analysts say Turkey is seen as a likely location for Israel to hunt down anyone who played a role in the October 7 attacks. Galia Lindenstrauss is an analyst with the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
When we see the massacres of October 7th, how they occurred and how well they were planned, obviously there was a lot of assistance also from the outside and a lot of things that were coming from outside of Gaza into Gaza. Some of this obviously came through Turkey, not by the Turkish government, but by the Turkish government or Turkish security authorities not paying enough attention to what was happening.
It's not the first time Turkey's MIT intelligence agency has clashed with Israel's Mossad. but the two formidable intelligence services also recently cooperated in foiling an Iranian plot against Israelis, explains Galia Lindenstrauss of the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
We definitely did see good cooperation between Mossad and MIT, and there was a foiling of supposedly imminent attack against Israelis on Turkish soil in 2022. So these organizations also know to cooperate. I think they have great respect to each other.
In December, Turkish authorities arrested alleged Islamic State members accused of planning attacks on synagogues. As the war in Gaza continues, experts say Ankara is determined to prevent the conflict from coming to Turkey. Murat Aslan for the Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research, an Ankara think tank.
Turkey does not want to be a playground for the intelligence organizations. So that's why I think Turkish intelligence increased the activity to identify exactly who is involved in what activity.
Turkey has witnessed terror attacks and assassinations in the past, dealing a heavy blow to tourism and the wider economy. Observers say Ankara is determined that the Middle East war won't come to the streets of Turkey. Doreen Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
An extensive investigation has found that despite international sanctions, the Kremlin has been using the Wagner Group to launder billions of dollars in African gold to help fund the war in Ukraine. VOA's Lori London spoke with Jessica Berlin, political analyst and author of the report.
What is blood gold?
Blood gold refers to gold being smuggled or sold by Russia that they are using to finance their war in Ukraine and also their hybrid warfare activities across the globe. We coined this term to make it easy for people to understand how the gold trade, even if it's illicit business, it's effectively an economic play, but it is directly tied to Russia's violent criminal aggression in Ukraine. This is not only business, it's truly part of how Russia is waging war.
What can you tell us about the countries that this involves and what was their strategy and some of the main takeaways?
Our investigation showed that through Wagner Group, Russia has earned over 2.5 billion US dollars from the blood gold trade since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine started in February 2022. And let's bear in mind, that's a minimum. That's just the money that could be tracked. It's probably the tip of the iceberg. The report was also only focusing on three countries in Africa where Wagner is active in the gold industry: Central African Republic, Sudan, and Mali. And in these countries, respectively, in CAR, for example, Wagner Group has been given exclusive mining rights for one of the largest gold mines in the country in exchange for giving security services to the ruling regime there. In Sudan, also in a similar way, Wagner Group has control of a gold refinery, which allows them to not only buy local gold, but then to process it. And so they are exporting it, smuggling it out, basically, into international markets. And this is a huge, huge cash cow for them. Upwards of 2 billion unreported gold coming out of Sudan every year, with Russia and Wagner Group certainly being a large part of that. And lastly, in Mali, the business model, if we can call it that, is a little bit different. Wagner is essentially being paid a monthly retainer by the ruling junta there. And that money, however, is coming, of course, from state coffers, which are being filled by the taxes paid by Western gold mining companies. Wagner is, of course, an operation of the Russian state. And so that money is going back to the Russian Federation and in turn being used to finance Russia's war on Ukraine, as well as their crimes across Africa, in Syria, etc.
I know you focused on those three African nations, but is this even broader than that?
Yes, absolutely. What this report highlights is also just one facet of the Russian Federation's multi-fronted assault on the international order and liberal democracies in particular. So we just focused on gold in this case, for example, but they are also mining diamonds, timber, you name it. And it's not only about the money. It's also giving them the ability and the reach in these countries by getting into bed with these ruling regimes and, in some cases, making the regimes basically dependent on Wagner Group for their own survival and security. They're able to also disrupt the local politics. They've deployed also Wagner's notorious bot farms and fake news operations, just like they used to target the 2016 presidential elections in the U.S., the Brexit referendum, a swathe of democratic elections across the Western world in the past years. Those methods that we well know have also been deployed in these African countries to destabilize the opponents and the critics of the ruling regimes who are, in effect, Wagner Group's clients. And this, in turn, the destabilization in Africa has regional impacts, causes displacement, violence, suffering. Thousands of civilians have been killed in the countries where Wagner is active. They've been implicated in gross human rights abuses and massacres, resulting in the deaths of hundreds, even in individual cases, and thousands overall. And this instability, the long-term effect, is also having spillover, of course, in Europe, a major target of Russia's destabilization hybrid warfare campaigns. So by increasing not only the revenue to the Russian state, but also instability in the African continent, leading to increased migration to the European continent, where, of course, the issue of migration is used as a flashpoint to activate right-wing extremists and xenophobic policies and politicians, it creates this spiral that has an undermining impact both in European democracies as well as in African states, democratic and undemocratic. In short, it's a one piece of the broad way in which the Russian Federation, the Kremlin, are trying to destabilize the world.
Jessica Berlin speaking with VOA's Lori London. We're following these other stories from around the world. The United Nations said Wednesday that one of its helicopters crash-landed in Somalia, and some passengers were reportedly taken hostage by the militant group Al-Shabaab.
I can confirm that there was an incident involving a UN-contracted helicopter that took place today in Galmudug in Somalia. Response efforts are underway, but I think you will understand, for the sake of the safety of all those on board, we're not going to say anything more.
The University of Oxford said on Thursday it had begun human testing of an experimental vaccine against the brain-swelling Nipah virus. There is no vaccine currently for the deadly virus. Nipah was first identified about 25 years ago in Malaysia and has led to outbreaks in Bangladesh, India, and Singapore. In Papua New Guinea, widespread looting and arson left buildings in the capital on fire. There have been reports of several deaths. A police strike Wednesday over a pay cut that officials blamed on an administrative glitch descended into lawlessness, with TV footage showing thousands in the streets, many carrying what appeared to be looted merchandise as black smoke billowed on the skyline. Another Republican presidential debate was held in the United States with only two candidates on stage, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis. Former President Donald Trump once again did not appear. But the big news from the Republican race for the presidential nomination is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announcing that he's ending his campaign.
It's clear to me tonight that there isn't a path for me to win the nomination, which is why I'm suspending my campaign tonight for President of the United States.
Taiwan will be holding its presidential election Saturday. A Chinese attempt to take over self-governing Taiwan has been a threat to the island for decades. It's a topic among the candidates in this election, but some residents say the threat of a Chinese attack is more real than ever before, and they are taking action. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details.
At this airsoft gun club, while these students are learning to handle a gun that shoots plastic pellets, Tony Liu has shot with real bullets and experienced war.
I bought a plane ticket and went to Ukraine. I didn't tell anyone.
These relics, the reminders of the 3 months Liu spent fighting in Ukraine.
Since the Russia-Ukraine war, there have been more and more of these civil defense classes.
Some people in Taiwan worry if Russia can attack Ukraine, then China could attack Taiwan. Some people take action by learning how to shoot. Others take an interest in using ham radios to communicate. In this classroom at Kuma Academy, students learn how to recognize disinformation, how to survive if basic infrastructure is disrupted, and how to save lives with first aid skills. Most of the students have been women, says Marco Ho, co-founder of Kuma Academy.
It's almost like a team of moms. Their motivation to come to class is they want to know in extraordinary situations, including war, what can they do, how can they protect their family.
The history between Taiwan and China stems from the Chinese Civil War that ended more than 70 years ago. The communists won, and the ruling nationalist government retreated to Taiwan. Beijing considers Taiwan a part of China, even though Taiwan now has its own democratic government. China attacking the island has always been a possibility, but after so many years, apathy has set in for some people, according to Kuma Academy co-founder Marco Ho.
Often there's a thinking, something that did not happen yesterday also did not happen today. Then tomorrow, it also won't happen. This thinking is very dangerous.
Many here say the China threat has changed ever since Chinese leader Xi Jinping came to power. According to Ho,
he wants to be the one to set the international standards.
Another reason to take note of the China threat, says student Watoto Liu.
I think the biggest reason is technology. There's confusion in all the information. Because information is very confusing, you don't know if it's going to be a military assault or information warfare.
Liu doubts that the people of Taiwan can protect the island.
I'm not very optimistic. People need to strengthen their ability to defend Taiwan. Life has been too peaceful.
Observers say whether China attacks does not depend on who is elected Taiwan's next president. Instead of trying to calculate the risk of war, Ho says, Taiwan's residents need to face the reality that war is possible and should prepare for it. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Taipei, Taiwan.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. And finally, the coming year will be a major test of democratic rule, as an estimated 4 billion people in more than 50 nations, that's almost half the world's population, are set to vote in elections. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the outcomes will likely shape global politics for years to come.
Sheikh Hasina won a fifth term as Prime Minister of Bangladesh Saturday, the first in a series of major elections across the world this year. Taiwan will hold its presidential election on January 13th, choosing Taiwan's future leaders to decide on the country's future, but also deciding on the peace and stability of the Indo-Pacific region. Indonesia is set to choose a new president next month to rule the nation of 277 million people, making it one of the world's biggest votes held on a single day. Pakistan will hold parliamentary elections in February, where opposition leader and former Prime Minister Imran Khan remains jailed on charges of leaking state secrets, which he denies. Russians will vote in presidential elections in March, and incumbent Vladimir Putin is all but certain to win. Ian Bond is from the Centre for European Reform.
He has control of all of the administrative machinery required to make sure that a crushing vote in favour of him is delivered. And, you know, we get another 6 years of Putin up to at least 2030.
India, the world's biggest democracy, will hold parliamentary elections between April and May, with the Bharatiya Janata, or BJP party, under Prime Minister Narendra Modi, ahead in the polls. Pushp Saraf is an Indian political journalist.
These are very significant elections because there are clearly two opinions in the country at the moment. One is that BJP is polarizing society on communal lines, and on the other hand, there is opinion that BJP is focusing more on national security.
On June 2nd, Mexico is due to hold presidential elections, which could herald a new milestone.
También es un evento histórico por la posibilidad.
Pollster Patricio Morelos said the election is also a historic event because of the possibility that, for the first time, a woman will govern Mexico. The European Union is set to hold parliamentary elections in June, representing more than half a billion people, amid a resurgence in support for right-wing populist parties. Britain is scheduled to hold elections before the end of the year, with polls suggesting opposition Labour Party leader Keir Starmer is on course to end a tumultuous 14 years of Conservative rule. On November 5th, Americans will decide whether to give Democrat Joe Biden a second term as US president or choose a Republican alternative, with Donald Trump seemingly his most likely opponent. Either result will have global ramifications. Anand Menon is Professor of International Politics at King's College London.
In the European context, there are all sorts of fears that, you know, Donald Trump could very, very quickly undermine NATO.
In the coming year, voters are set to wield their democratic power on an unprecedented scale, and the consequences will likely be felt for decades to come. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Vice President Kamala Harris has called the organizations that smuggle foreign nationals into and within the United States predatory actors. She deplored their use of extortion and disregard for the safety of the migrants they exploit. We must attack every aspect of their business and ensure swift and severe accountability for these actions, and that is the work that our administration has been doing, she said. Such work was on display January 4th, when the U.S. Justice Department announced that a Texas woman pleaded guilty for her role in a massive human smuggling operation. In a statement, the Justice Department said that Irminia Serrano Piedra, also known as Irma and Boss Lady, led an organization that facilitated the unlawful transportation and movement of hundreds of migrants within the United States and harbored and concealed the migrants from detection by law enforcement authorities. The migrants were citizens of Mexico, Guatemala, and Colombia. The typical fee paid to the organization by the migrants or their families was $8,000. The methods used by the organization to transport migrants placed their lives in danger, as they were frequently held in confined spaces with little ventilation that became overheated, and they were driven at high speeds with no vehicle safety devices, the Justice Department said. Members of the organization commonly referred to the migrants as boxes, packages, or pieces. Piedra acknowledged she made substantial money from her involvement in human smuggling, and that she had been doing it, and that she had been doing it for a lifetime. Piedra is scheduled to be sentenced in April and faces a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. In addition, she has forfeited two properties with current estimated values of $2,275,000 and $550,000 that were purchased with the illicit proceeds of human smuggling, as well as a money judgment of over $942,000. The Justice Department also announced the guilty pleas of 10 other defendants who previously previously pleaded guilty for their involvement in the scheme. The indictments and convictions are the result of the coordinated efforts of Joint Task Force Alpha, or JTFA, created in June 2021 by U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland in partnership with the Department of Homeland Security. To date, the JTFA's work has resulted in over 250 domestic and international arrests of leaders, organizers, and significant facilitators of human smuggling. The United States will continue to hold such predatory actors accountable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.